Hi, my name is Chandri Ray and I'm the Associate Lifestyle Editor at Vogue Singapore. Welcome to Season 2 of Vogue Uncut, a special Next in Vogue edition. Today I have with me Christina Rasmussen, the co-owner and chef at Fura. Hi Christina, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Danish and American. I'm trained in pastry. So I trained in US and that was kind of my start. And then I've traveled around and worked in Europe and then found my way to Singapore. So my background is fully being a chef, but I love just everything that to do with food and outdoors and stuff like that.
How long have you been in Singapore now?
Almost 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long has Fura been around?
Just one. Yeah. We just are celebrating our first birthday. We're going to talk about it in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Congrats on Fura's first birthday. I visited the restaurant almost a full year ago, I think.
Yeah, I think just as we opened.
Yeah, yeah, at this point. Because I remember at the time when you guys were opening, there were a couple of changes to the timeline, which we can talk about a little bit if you want. But I remember just entering the restaurant and feeling like this is quite different. Like it's a different space. The menu looks really different to anything I've seen before. So can you tell us a little bit about the philosophy at Fura? How do you guys conceptualize your menu and what is the concept at the heart of Fura really?
So sustainability is like such a big part of our life between me and Sasha. And she's my life partner and my business partner. And so we basically like split it off as she does mostly drinks and I do all the food. All of our food is really, food and drinks are focused on ingredients that are in abundance, invasive and prevalent. And it helps us like rebalance the ecosystem. So we came about it by reading a book called A Mushroom at the End of the World. And it's basically talking about the Matsutake mushroom after like coming about after the bombings in Japan. Mm. And it like shows that really like nature can come about in human disturbed land.
Yeah.
And how we need to, we can live symbiotically and how we can like nurture that and find that again. Because really we're quite destructive as humans.
Yeah.
And how can we like be more mindful and be more conscious about how we're living and where we're taking our resources.
Yeah. Amazing. You mentioned ingredients that are abundant, invasive and prevalent.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What do you mean when you say, I guess abundant is a bit more obvious, but what do you mean when you say invasive and prevalent?
So invasive means that it's in abundance, but it's not to benefit. So an example that we have on our menu is like either insects or jellyfish, which are definitely eye catchers on the menu. So jellyfish grow in like it's called blooming when the temperatures of the ocean are too high or too acidic. And it really prevents oxygen from going through because they're so thick in their groups. And so that's an example of an ingredient that like we need to consume more and figure out what to do with in order to help rebalance and bring down that population. So we like to say instead of farming for different fish or different other animals that we consume, that's something that is in abundance, it's not a benefit. And we should figure out how to do with that to help rebalance the ecosystem.
So you're almost analyzing the local ecosystem to see what you can rebalance in a way to benefit nature.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
How do you do that? Like what is the science behind it? Or what is your background that allows you to sort of, you know, find out, okay, what are the species that I should be targeting right now on my menu?
Just interest. I mean, like, it's just like, it's we're so passionate about it. And like the driving force of Fura is just basically we're super sustainable and conscious at home. And that's really important to me. Before moving to Singapore, we lived in Denmark, which is much more
sustainability minded.
They've integrated that in a way more rounded part of life. Yeah. So it's not just as simple as like recycling. It's, you know, it's about sourcing and where like just the start of everything and like lower packaging. And when you start with that from like a young age, it's ingrained in you of that's how life is. And also having an education from the start of like being outdoors and respecting nature, I think that like harvest like harnesses that.
Yeah.
And so when we come to Singapore, like we still live by those standards. Yeah. It's just a bit more difficult to
navigate.
Yeah. So like when we moved here and we're living a certain lifestyle at home. Of course, it's more expensive, but we wouldn't change it. It's just like what we believe in.
Yeah.
And so for us to translate that to our business is like unquestionable.
We'll come back to Fura in just a bit. But speaking about your background, I think you used to be the head forager at Noma. How long ago was this?
That was until 2021, so just after COVID. But the job is a bit...
It sounds like the most amazing
thing. It was like the most cool. It's like the coolest job ever. Yeah. I think like you'll never find that again because you don't have a restaurant that runs like that around the world. So the resources are quite different. But yeah, so after I went to school for pastry, and then I'm half Danish as well. Mm. So like for me going to Denmark is not a problem. I can just stay as long as I want. And I kind of fell into that during the internship program. And foraging basically is like going out into the forest and all of nature and collecting the wild things. Like the most kind of prominent thing is probably mushrooms that people can associate to. But it was like flowers, anything on the beach, all the beach herbs. It's very hard to visualize because in Singapore it's different and people don't have that relationship. And also with the temperature, like it's much smaller.
Not the same experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was my job to then pick the wild things from all outside and maintain and continue relationships with the farmers that we used and bring it back to the kitchen. And the chefs would integrate that into the menu. And it was such a part of their ethos because that's a lot of what they were built on, that they prioritized that. And so in the internship program, which you do for a couple months, you're going out for like a week or two with then their like contractor who supplied other ingredients for other restaurants, but also helped Noma out. And then as an intern, you would go with him and learn what to do and, you know, where to go and things like that. And this was going like hundreds of kilometers a day. It's not just like out and back and it's not a couple hours. It's like you're supplying the best restaurant in the world. Like it's not just home use. So that was like really amazing. And after you're in a kitchen like that, which is really intense and wonderful in its own way, it's refreshing to be outside and be like, this is a job, this is crazy. Then they closed down and kind of were re-operating to open their new space. And I had been in this position where I had spent so much time outside with them because I went back the following year and worked with this private contractor, Michael Larsen, and was with him for several months where that's all I did all day, every day, while the restaurant was closed and trying to reopen.
So you'd be spending how long just, you know, out in nature?
Like in summer, in Denmark, it's light out, like almost 20 hours a day. So we would go out probably 8 a.m. and come back around 10 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because we had to travel like distance. You have to go to different terrain and certain farmers were on like, you know, a couple hours away and things like that. So every day was different. But it was like an opportunity where you're focusing on like that. It's not kitchen, it's not anything else. It's just like getting up and supplying and really developing a relationship with nature. Yeah.
It's taking sourcing to a whole new level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you develop, like I mentioned earlier, like just so much more respect when you're in there every day and like getting to know like all the hills of the beaches and where to find things and how things grow and how they're symbiotic and you need each other to grow. And so when the opportunity arose that I would take on kind of like a private role for just supplying Noma, it was perfect.
How do you think your experience and, you know, the skills that you've learned doing that foraging role, how do you bring that to Fura? Because the Singapore context is obviously very different, right? You can't really go out for 18 hours a day and pick things off East Coast.
That was a reality check. Slash was like, you're going to have to figure out something else to do because that's certainly not a job here.
Yeah.
I think like on a very basic level, it's just remembering that that's what gives me inspiration and gives me drive to make change because there's so much destruction. I remember like after COVID, we went to one of the first forests that I'd ever been to, like back in 2016. And they had completely plowed it down from like one day to the next practically. to make like bike paths and like this beautiful forest look like a fairy tale. Like you have the canopy of like these super tall trees that kind of look like redwoods, and you would go in and the forest floor is very cool, so you have the fog and then the ferns. It was like, it's crazy, it's so beautiful. Then the next day everything's burnt because it's just the sun goes through, and all of a sudden like a whole ecosystem that survived and was just there for decades is gone. And that was so painful to see something like, this is what we're doing on such a micro level. So when I remember that and talk about that, I'm like, this is why we're doing stuff. Like, this is why we're doing Fura, because there's nothing else. I have nothing else to work towards. Yeah. It's just, I have nothing else to add if it's not making the world a better place, which sounds so cliche, but it's just, that's it.
But you're cutting down a forest that has been around for what? At least 100 years, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, especially for Denmark, I was like, this is so shameful.
Yeah.
It was a bit shocking.
For a bike path.
Yeah, right. For a mountain bike. Like, you can go bike somewhere else. Exactly. It's Denmark, you bike anywhere. Yeah. So that, I think, is like in its own way, and like a direct example where I was like, we need to do something that's impactful. Mm. And, you know, on a small level, then on a different level, it's more like, how can we work with different farmers within Singapore that are like-minded and want to instill change? And for us, it's like, we're a good platform that can highlight the people who are doing the things that are different. And it's all the small guys making the change. And how can we bring that together and just highlight the people who are really important, who don't have enough.
Tell me a little bit about these small guys. As you said, when you talk about insects, jellyfish, what has the sourcing process been like? Or even for other ingredients where you're working with these smaller farmers or producers that you think need more, they need a platform to showcase what they can do, and you guys are that for them, obviously.
Yeah, I think like it's kind of a mix. Some people found us just because it aligns with what they're working towards. Mm-hmm. And some things are just like friends to friends or like, you know, other formats. So I think like our most prominent is like our hydroponic farmer, which is out in Las Gambas. So it's like 20, 25 kilometers away, and Green Loop Farms. And they're like a small family that they do this like as a side passion project. The main guy is like, he works in insurance or something. And so it's just, you can tell how passionate he is, and it's wonderful to have a relationship with someone where like they just are like, we'll do anything to improve our product. You let us know like what works for you. And an example of that is I had a dish where I wanted to use carrot tops, but Singapore does not have carrot tops because usually it's cut off before transport because they wilt, and then you have to have it in cold storage. Otherwise it helps like hinder the growth of the size of the carrot. So it was like, I just wrote him and I was like, hey, I really can't find this ingredient. Is this something you can help me with? It's just the tops. And he was like, yeah, no problem. Like, so it's really cool to have someone who's like, I'm ready for that. Like, I'll take on anything to be able to just try different things and supply different people. And they're great. Otherwise, the mushroom farmer we use is Bewildered. And they're out in, they're actually across the street from us in Bukumira. And Kia is like, what I describe him as is kind of a mad scientist meets a hippie, and he's just really passionate. You like that, it just comes off, it like radiates off of him, and he's super knowledgeable and passionate. And he just goes out and he grows the mushrooms from spore, and so he does things a different way, again developing like flavors and textures that you can't get if you're trying to cut corners. And you pay a price for it, but if you have a mushroom dish, you're gonna want the best mushrooms. And everybody loves it. So he's amazing, and his team is really cool. And they do different workshops. They work with like mycelium to develop fabrics and trying to do jewelry and different things. So they're really like spearheading a different sector that I think is the future as well. So they're cool.
So it sounds more holistic. Like, they're not just growing mushrooms for restaurants, but also
after they started with like the other stuff first, right. And then they went into restaurants and they found me, which is cool.
Tell us a little bit about your menu, which you guys have designed and you spearhead at Fura. What are some of the dishes, or what is one dish that you think really embodies the spirit of Fura and all the different philosophies that you guys are trying to incorporate into the concept?
Our main goal is really just like making sustainable eating and like just sustainable dining more approachable. Because I think when it comes down to it, people have a stigma around with sustainability, it and being like more plant focused is definitely hand in hand with taking like giving up something or sacrificing something. And we're showing that that's not the case. And none of our guests are really vegan or vegetarian, but we love that they're open to being like, this is such a fun way of eating, and like the food is delicious and the drinks are amazing, and you're leaving being like, maybe I can incorporate this more, which is really important to us because change happens in numbers. So throughout the whole menu, it's really like highlighting one ingredient. So each dish and each drinks take one of those like categories of being in abundance, prevalent, or invasive. And then we apply that throughout. So I think we try to balance it. Yeah. But I think the coolest like dishes that I love right now is our foraged dish, which is a company, the parent company is Vow, and they work with cell-based meats, and they're amazing, and the team is great, and they're also really passionate, and they just came to market this year. And it's really cool to see like how we have guests come in and they're like, never heard it before, never tried it before. Even vegetarians being like, I haven't had meat in 10 or 15 years, and this is the first time I've had something like this.
But this is different for them.
But this is different, yeah. And the cell is derived from a quail, so of course it's not plant based, but they don't kill the quail in order to.
It's not animal agriculture.
Exactly. So like they've figured out how to do this in a much more efficient way without harming animals. So for whatever reason you're vegetarian or vegan, like that's kind of, you don't have to worry about that part.
Yeah. Or even if you're not vegetarian or vegan, it's a choice that you can make just to eat more ethically, right?
Exactly.
If you are going to eat meat products anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I think like there's a lot of those people who are like, this is unnatural. This is like grown in a lab. And it's again, just taken the wrong way and like information put out there that's not really like perceived correctly.
What about how we eat today is natural?
Yeah, I know. I was like, for sure you've eaten worse things.
Unless you're going out off your HDB and catching a chicken.
Foraging,
and,
good luck.
You know,
So that was, that's really cool to kind of change people's minds and make them think again, why are you eating this way? Or how can you leave here being more mindful of how doing your research on like, you know, eating at home differently or going out differently. And then otherwise, like our kale dish, which is changing people's minds about kale. Like to me, eating raw kale is not that interesting for a lot. And so we do it like sauteed, like wok flavor. So it's really like, it's a little smoky with the seed butter and glazed mushroom soy. And that is, everyone's like, I've never had a kale like this before. Cause no one really chooses a kale salad with that much excitement. So that's really cool. And that's the guys from Green Loop, and they harvest them very small. So they're very tender and soft, like succulent and yummy.
I think it's very clever that you guys don't brand yourselves as a plant-based.
Yeah, that never
bar
works.
Or restaurant.
Yeah,
right?
People come in now and they're like, because we have insects and we have, you know, some things, the quail, and everyone's like, oh, I thought you're vegan. I'm like, no, I don't want that association at all. And like that works in a lot of places, but it won't work here. And so we're not trying to be like, we recognize people aren't going to go vegan. Like the whole world can't be plant-based for all sorts of reasons. So it's just about us making small changes to be more sustainable and more conscious of how we, you know, eat and drink and consume.
Maybe kind of redefining for a lot of people who come to your restaurant, what a vegetarian dish or what a vegan dish could mean.
Yeah.
Because you're very right. In Singapore, like the way we think about food is very categorical. Like it's very like, okay, vegetarian food means I have to give up something.
I have to sacrifice something. It's immediately that thought process. And like also like Sasha, she's Sri Lankan and Chinese. So she's very split from two very heritage, like traditional based household. And we always talk about how, especially in this part of the world, it's very like traditional and generational eating and trying to like pull away from that. And you have that like that for your own reasons, but we're trying to jumpstart and like look ahead. And that's where like the future, a journal of future food has come about, because we're not focused on like that type of tradition anymore. We're trying to think ahead of like, how can we incorporate like more regional or local, like farmers and ingredients and things that make sense because of food miles, but not focusing on like traditional eating and thinking ahead of time. So, yeah.
Because the way that we eat is a very good tool to kind of make the world a healthier place, and everyone eats, right? So everyone can.
Yeah, it's like it's a social, like what else are you doing? Yeah. Every day you're like, what am I having for breakfast? What am I having for lunch? What am I having dinner? It's like your whole day is planned around it. So it's such an important thing to our lives for all sorts of reasons, and how you like share experiences and like, you know, get on common ground is usually through food.
Yeah.
So it's important.
Fantastic. And I know people are going to want to know this, so I have to ask, how do you guys, give me a few examples of how you incorporate insects into your menu, and what has the reception been like from your diners?
It's about trend, like there's trend versus intention. And then there's a very like specific way of being more trendy and more like gimmicky, which is just like throwing some bugs on top of something and like that's not our point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which like we can offer that if you're into that.
Yeah.
But that's not really what we're about. It's like, how can we actually incorporate this into a diet? Because I don't think people are going to be snacking on crickets like on the,
yeah, you know, like something that people can actually maybe not take home at this stage, but can envision as part of their future diet.
Exactly.
In a realistic way.
Exactly. So we do a lot of like infusions and ferments because it's just about taking the flavor. Of course, this is not an animal product technically. So, but you do to get a lot of the flavor as if you were using one. And the main one is like a whey protein. So you can't receive whey in any, like any plant-based form. So it really helps like by fermenting it, we do a garum, which is the most similar association is like a fish sauce is like a style of garum. Or like a miso is also a good visual of terms of texture.
And which types of insects do you... We use
in the garum we do cricket and grasshopper, and then so we ferment that with like barley koji and salt and water and let that hang out at 60 degrees for several months, and that really just breaks down and it gives us like this super rich umami kind of flavor of a miso, and then we incorporate that in different dishes, so or different formats. So we have that right now with a mahumara, which is a Middle Eastern red capsicum dip, and we have that with a walnut short crust. So it's like a small tart. And then we have the tangy, like savory umami mahumara piped in. And then a sweet and tangy pickle from butternut squash. And then it's like a small tart. And it's like very visually pleasing. Because I think that's also something that people have a problem with is like just the visuals or the optics of like eating insects. So we're trying to really like make everything very beautiful and easy and like fun and just approachable. And then for the drink, it's kind of like our version of a savory margarita, which everyone loves and knows, so we just want to, you know, use it like that. And we cook down mealworms, which really on its own is like a peanut meets puffed rice, and it's like it's not that advanced in terms of flavor, but I think it's like it's quite cool. And we cook it with like we stir fry it with different spices, and it's like celery powder, oregano, onion, spring onion, capsicum, jalapeno, and then we deglaze it with some lime and cream, vegan cream, and then fat wash it with tequila.
Yeah,
and so it like does the infusion and does its job in terms of like injecting a bunch of flavor, but it's not like you're seeing it. It's more of just showing how we can elevate those flavors and things like that. So
a different way of getting those flavors without necessarily using traditional animal products.
Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting. My experience with eating insects is quite limited. I've only had deep fried silkworms in Bangkok a couple of times.
Yeah, that's for everyone. Like, I think that's what it's then it's more like visual. That's like, oh, look what I'm doing.
It's like a novelty.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're like on the street and it's on a stick and you're like, there's a whole scorpion sitting on it, or like whatever other insects are that they're using. So of course there's a fun time and place for that, but like that's not an everyday snack for you. And that's what we want to show, is just you can really incorporate this more sustainable future protein source.
So in terms of the, I mean, if we can get into like the nutritional composition for a little bit, you talk about future protein source. Would you say that your work with insects nutritionally, can it actually incorporate protein into a dish the way that adding a piece of chicken would?
Of course, like the volume is different.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, in terms of like weight, and volume.
Because you're not eating a chicken breast's worth of
No, that's insect. Like, you know, 100, yeah. 200, 300 grams. Yeah. Of course, like that in insects is quite a massive volume. So that's why we like to really ferment it and compact it. Mm. Nutritional wise, it's a bit more difficult because, of course, if you compare like gram to gram, it's actually up there with beef. So it is super high because you can really eat the whole thing and then you don't have any waste anyways. But of course, getting to that volume is a bit more difficult. So you still need, you know, if you want your proteins from being a plant-based source, you know, then you're still looking at like legumes and different, you know, grain, your engine
everyday,
grains and stuff
everyday
like that.
Foods. Yeah. And anyway, Fura is a restaurant. Like, we don't expect restaurants to be nutritionally like the benchmark, right?
It's not,
we should be eating every
exactly
day.
It's an occasion or you know stuff like that. So
totally, what have your diners, how have your diners reacted to these dishes, where especially when you tell them like, oh, actually there's like a garum in this that's made from this and this insect?
Well, we're very careful of how we train our staff, and like we want to use really positive wording and context to give like the like your initial, you know, kind of talk about this is really important because it's really hard to backtrack. So you'd be really careful on how we describe and to make it like also grab associations to understand like what texture is like, or because I think texture and visuals is the most direct
visceral.
Yeah, exactly. Thing also, yeah. If people are like, oh, they're kind of backing off of that because they're unsure and unaware of what that's going to be like. And so for us, we're trying to compare like more positive associations to that. So when we are talking with our staff about, okay, how do we describe like crunch or butteriness or, you know, these types of adjectives to associate a more positive, like, association, you know? And so if you've done a little bit of research about who we are and what we're trying to do, you always come in with an open mind. And our menu is really difficult, I think, if you don't have anything, you know, it's very different. So I think if you're open-minded and walking in, you're like, okay, this is super cool. But we always, you know, we're always trying to educate and best show how our staff can walk you through and like, you know, have no surprises in any negative way. So
yeah. Have you ever had a reaction where someone is like, no, I can't eat insects, or I can't
yeah
eat.
For sure, yeah. I mean, they're like, that's not for me, and that's why we only have it in one or two things. And that's just like the start. Of course, we want to have it in ways where like it's optional. So if you're there with a group, some people are like, this is super cool, we definitely want to try this, and some are like, you know, this is not for me. And then you can still have the dish and it's two separate things. And we want to show how, like, if you want it, that's great. If not, we're not excluding you, you know, like we're very an inclusive space. So
the options.
Not, you know, it's not like you're forced into anything, or, you know, we're going to look down upon you. It's just preference. That's fine.
It's been a tough time, I think, for Singapore's F&B scene in general. We've been seeing, you know, a lot of restaurants, a lot of chefs kind of struggling, even like really fantastic restaurants that have been around for a while. And I think it's just a symptom of the fact that we are a very small country with a huge food scene, and people are starting to travel, and, you know, there are so many reasons. But I wanted to know what your experience has been like. So you've been open for about a year now. You're already on Asia's 50 best bars list. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
But what has it been like, your day-to-day operations and, you know, just keeping doors open?
Well, I think like when we first ventured to this, like our only comparison was kind of for Sasha pre-COVID. She ran Operation Dagger up until then. And so the expectation, of course, I wasn't here. So what everybody tells me is like it was always really crazy pre-COVID, like the drinking scene and bar hopping, and they would close Anseong Hill and, you know, all these things that sounded quite intense but really fun, is really different now. And I think it's just people realizing like how they want to spend their money and their experiences, and after being trapped inside, you know, every country like with COVID, and like you say, people want to travel more and get out, it's really different. Like the whole, when you talk to everybody, it's hard, and because no one's seen a scene, nobody has seen a F&B scene of this. Like you can't compare like what it used to be like, and making projections and seeing what trends are and stuff, because we keep being wrong. Or we just keep seeing different things. Like we think we're like, oh, okay, you know, we're super busy now on like Tuesdays. And then like the next month it's like, no, never mind, it's Thursday. And so it just changes. It's crazy. And
almost
I think
at random.
Yeah, we're on Amoy Street. So there's so much turnover because rent is really crazy. And now there's a lot of like a lot of leases are coming up like from COVID and things like that. So people are like, I can't afford this anymore. There's no rent control. So it really puts F&B in a hard position. And it's such a core part of Singapore's like tourism and livelihood and economy. I really hope we can figure out a way to just better the whole industry because it's really tough.
In terms of growing a business, as you mentioned, are there any challenges you've faced in the last year that you think you've learned something from and you'd like to share?
I think like we were dealt a lot of crappy cards and that's just by chance. I think like we always talk about, we could write a book about all the things you don't do when you open a business. I think anyone who's done that also feels the same way. It's really like just working with the right people and surrounding yourself with people who are like there to lift you up and listen to your gut. And we went through a lot with like opening, and we're in a shop house, so we have to abide by URA and all the things that come with that. That was a surprise.
Yeah, I remember the whole...
It was really tough because we had like, we have an air well, which a lot of people don't know what it is, but it's like an internal structure in shop houses to help with, I guess, airflow, but I think it's really just conservation. There's not really a purpose for it anymore. And our previous owner of the building, which was like 20 years ago, illegally like took it down. And then nobody knew about it until the downstairs operations had needed to like apply for a new license. And then URA came down and was like, oh, this whole floor plan is different. We have to shut down everything. And that was before we opened. So like, they told us, okay, you can't open until we sort this out. And it's not even, we did like structural engineer testing. It's not like safety. It's not like someone's going to fall through the floor. It was like strictly just conservation. And so that took like a huge toll to, you know, opening. We have staff already on payroll. We have like all these different challenges. And we have our media, like we've already hosted media. We've already told them when we're going to open. And now it's like backtracking, which really we suffered when we opened because it's like the boy who cried Rolf. We're like, okay, we're going to open. And then we can't. And then our license is revoked. And then all these different things happen. So it was really a nightmare that we're like, okay, we got to take some time before we do this again. Yeah. But it's all worth it. And it's all like when we have guests come in who are just really excited about what we're doing and thank us for what we're doing is like the most rewarding thing. And then having these opportunities where we now have like a bigger platform to talk about what we're doing, like you guys, is like, it's so cool. It really, I forget all about it. So it's great.
That's good to hear. I remember when it happened, I was texting you because we shot you guys in the restaurant.
Yeah, it was end August, I think.
And I was texting you being like, so when are you
and
opening?
I was like, I don't even know because we could have like our whole floor ripped out right now, but it's all good. Our floor is still there.
You got through it.
We did. Through our process of building, it was so tough. We ended up getting a puppy, which was like the best decision ever. It was like, you're opening a business with your spouse and like now you're getting a dog. What's wrong with you? And it was like,
we have no other choice.
And like, that's been the best thing ever. So that was like our quarter life crisis of opening. Yeah, it's like, okay, we'll just get a dog.
It was your hump.
It was, and now everything's good. So
I also wanted to ask, like you did talk about, you know, the way you guys are doing things is different, not just, or rather than different, it's very aligned to your values, not just in terms of the food that you put out and the education that you do in that space, but also the way that you run your business. So like, for example, equality when it comes to staffing. I'd love to know if there's anything you can share, any lessons that you've learned or any practices that you implement that you think is something worth sharing for other people in the F&B space to consider maybe.
I think like when people walk in, they notice immediately we're an all women's team, which is not intentional. To me,
it just happened.
It's like, we're just more efficient. We communicate more. We have all these other pros, but it's really like we really have hired based on loyalty over anything else, like over skill set, over experience, because that is we need people who support us and support our business and take care of our business, and we take care of them.
And believe in the same things, I'm guessing.
For sure, especially when it comes to something so personal and like and intentional. Like, if you don't believe in it, then, you know, you can go anywhere else. Like, you can work anywhere else. But what's really important to us is that you are driven by like what our ethos are and what our goals are. We can really teach any skills, you know, but like the soft skills and the intentions for why people are here, that's like something inside. And so that's like the main thing we look for is someone who's there to support you and support your business, and and everything else will come after. So,
yeah, then you're passing these skills that you guys have onto the right people who will at some point go off on their own journey and make a similar type of change, where they're sort of also, there's this ripple effect of like people who believe in a better food industry and a more ethical food industry.
For sure. I mean, like, I think in the past like 2 decades, there's so much change on like workers' rights and how much you work, and especially in the chef world, is like you kill yourself and then you brag about it. And then it's like, oh man, I just worked like 100 hours a week. And it's like, but why does it have to be like that? You know, that's just, you're being burnt out, and that's not a sustainable way to live. And like, there's a way for balance. And I think there's a lot of people who still believe that's like the only way for success. And we just want to prove, you know, you have to have balance in order for longevity.
Yeah.
And like, that's how you're going to have a more, like a longer impact, mm-hmm. is to be able to do this for a longer period of time and work towards new things. And that's one of the first things we said to our girls is just, you know, we don't need you to work harder. We need you to work smarter. And smarter is not being there for 15 hours a day, you know, every day, and being there till 3 a.m. It's being really mindful of like how you work and being very efficient and finding a good balance in work and life. And I think like that's getting a lot better throughout both sides of the industry, because we kind of went through that phase and in an overcorrection, and now we're trying to balance it back out.
Totally. I mean, there seems to be this idea that there's only one way to succeed, and it's almost this like sort of gatekeeping of like, you have to work a crazy amount, you have to be burnt out, you have to be like,
And that's like across all industries. Yeah. I mean, that's like in fashion, that's in food, it's in, you know, tech and finance and everything takes different skill set, but you don't have to completely kill yourself over it.
Probably not your best self when you are doing that.
No, right? For sure. Oh my gosh, absolutely.
You're not innovating, you're not thinking.
No, of like, and you're not always like the greatest person or the greatest partner or greatest friend or
to be,
you
know, around,
sibling or daughter, you know, whatever. So it's definitely like a reality check of like your priorities and making sure like what is important to you and what are you going to carry on next.
Yeah.
So that's nice to be in a position where you can implement that. And like you say, kind of teach that to the next, I mean, generation is a bit strong, but like the next set of people, because you learn from, you know, you're molded into like a lot of thoughts and practices based on wherever you work. Mm. And so if we can implement that, that's great.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So I did want to ask you, in terms of looking into the future, which is something that you guys do at Fura, how do you think we're going to be eating in 10 or 15 years from now? Mm. And how do you think you're going to be part of that conversation?
I think like there's a divide between, like, we have choices to make. And I think those decisions in the next couple of years is really going to tell us what that's going to look like. I think there's like, we can keep going the way we're like the route we're going. And then we just have to deal with the consequences of, you know, things being too expensive. We're already seeing that now, really. But like, you know, things being too expensive, we can't afford it. It becomes more of a luxury. Mm. Manipulation of ingredients, because we have to consume differently. Or we are the ones who are changing. And then we can grow into a more like natural world as a push, but kind of where we used to be. And I think once we sort out which path we're going to take, and it's really difficult because it's quite daunting of being like, I'm just one person. But if you're just one person making that decision, and then we can get more people on board, that's what's going to drive the change. So I really hope that we can figure out how to sort everybody out, because it's a big ask of, you know, where we need to be. And all you can do is take like one day at a time and be more conscious and plan a bit more about, you know, what how you're going to act that day and how you're going to consume that day. What Fura wants to be, like how we're going to be involved. That is hard. I didn't think about that. I've not gotten past like the 5-year plan.
10 to 15 is a bit long. Yeah.
I think like for us, we're very open to adapting of like how we can implement our success or our experiences into like what's needed next. Mm. And I think that's really helped us like even just navigate the year of a really difficult F&B scene is being very flexible in where we need to be next. And that has a lot of benefits of being like a very small team and a very like specific driving force of being conscious and sustainable, totally. Because it allows us to like jump and do the next thing very quickly. Yeah. And then,
because it's not a vanity project, it's not like it has to be like this because it needs to look this way,
exactly,
but rather like meeting the needs of the community
for sure. So that allows us to really like jump onto new projects, or so we're really open. I think that's probably why we've not thought that far, because we're very much okay, whatever comes our way and like whatever makes sense and becomes like a really passionate passion project for us, then yeah.
Thank you so much, Christina, for being here with us today. I think that was a really lovely chat, and I'm hoping that our audience will take something away, just something small in terms of how you can be more mindful in your daily choices.
Exactly.
And more importantly, go check out Fura.
Thank you.
It's really, we'll really good. There. And stay tuned for more episodes of the second season of Vogue Uncut.